This FabFM Voice of the Douglas Shire podcast is proudly brought to you by Bendigo Bank, Port Douglas and Mossman, offering a full range of competitive banking products and technology you'd expect from a big bank with the personal service and care you'd expect from us. Drop into your nearest branch at Port Village Shopping Centre or Front Street Mossman. Bendigo Bank, the better big bank.
Obviously, whatever we say isn't going to be suitable for you and some other people, and that's okay. Look, we are here representing the vast majority of the people that want a microgrid.
That's what I think's wrong. Well, the vast majority of businesses that want a microgrid, right. Not residents.
What's wrong with businesses being viable and profitable? I asked the question.
No argument against it whatsoever.
Well, the only way it's going to happen is with a microgrid. That's what we're doing.
But why are you cutting out the other 80% of people?
Listen, there's a lot of people sitting here tonight that are not a business. They got their own residences here, and with respect, if you don't want it, you just should give your lock number and where you are, and we can make sure that it drives straight past you with never ever having access to the communication, to the microgrid, or to the communications that runs with it. Not a problem. You can stand by your philosophy as long as you like, and we can lock your block out in perpetuity. Not a problem. But if your next door neighbour wants it, they'll put a take off there so that they can get it. You know, the one thing that is different from the argument that you're putting up about one way is that there are others with a different point of view, including the business community, and they are not locking you into a situation. They're saying, this is what we need to meet our business requirements. This is what we need for the overwhelming majority, in my view, the overwhelming majority of people resident up here. If you don't want it, we are not forcing you to have it. But your position is you're forcing everybody else to go to yours. That is so wrong. That is wrong. Well, why wouldn't you give it access to the residents as well, for Christ's sake?
50% or 80% or 20% that do not want to connect to that reticulated.
Well, don't connect.
Why should you lock them out of having the benefit to be able to upgrade their system?
Well, you can upgrade your system. Nobody's stopping you. You can update it to perpetuity. Talk to your school. Talk to your health centre. See if they want it. How many people here are totally opposed to a microgrid? Who wants to leave it exactly as it is? Put your hands up. Well, keep it, please.
There was over 100 residents at the meeting, and we described or gave people an indication of what each option entailed. The unanimous agreement from the meeting was that everyone wanted to see a microgrid installed into the Daintree, and that was unanimous. So taking that into consideration, that is what we've pursued over the last 18 months or so. A couple of months ago, I applied to the federal government for a grant to fund the next stage of this project. Last Tuesday, the 5th of November, I signed a contract with the federal government for a grant of $990,150 plus GST, and it's going through a company that I set up on behalf of the community. It's Daintree Renewable Energy Pty Ltd. It is the proponent to the Daintree Energy Program. It is non-for-profit. I'll hand over to Richard. He will give you an idea of where we're going.
Russell and Teresa won't see a cent out of this, and they haven't seen a cent out of this at any point in time. And I'd just like that to be acknowledged, because they put all of their time, and this is a controversial issue sometimes, they get a lot of backlash, and at the outset, they aren't getting any financial benefit out of this at all to make this community better and to advocate for the community. And I think that probably doesn't get well enough understood when I read the social media posts and things about the Daintree. I came into the Daintree thing a little over 2 years ago, and we did a small study for ARENA, and some of you might have been here for the presentation in March 2018. And in that study, we were asked to look at what is the best way to supply power to the Daintree. And obviously it was a limited time engagement, and we had only so many resources to do it, but we did the first ever metering study in Daintree to gather actual real loads to see how power is used here. And we used a lot of spatial imagery and a lot of community discussions with different people, and a lot of data that was available, and we reviewed all of the studies that were there, and we came up with a range of criteria that were used to establish what is a good power supply. And those metrics that we looked at for that in terms of what makes a good power system were, is it equitable? Is it cost effective and economic? That was another thing that we looked at. And also, is it reliable? Because there's a lot of reliability issues when your systems, you run them yourself, they age. Some of them are good. Some people can afford them to be good. Some people have new ones. Some of them aren't. So plenty of issues around reliability. And is the system, above all, given that it's the Daintree, is it sustainable? You know, is this something that is environmentally sound, green? You know, are we burning more carbon? Are we burning more particulates? Is it more diesel? Or are we getting rid of that? So we poured all those factors in together and reviewed a range of different options. It's all publicly available. And we found the microgrid, with certain conditions, was the best way to achieve what the Daintree needed. But that isn't sufficient to build something. It's just really a study. And I think people are sick of studies. So at the same time, we were working with the state and the federal government through ARENA and a range of other people. And we were asked a whole lot of questions about option one, which was the microgrid. The proposal was, because of the nature, you know, it's sustainable society and sustainable council area and shire, we wanted to reach something really ambitious. So we said, there was plenty of potential for solar. Admittedly, there's a lot of seasonality here. If you could store it and if you could transport it to different people who use it, i.e. through a network, we could achieve something which no one else has done, which is 100% renewable microgrid. And we thought that'd be the right sort of pitch for the Daintree. And so to get there in terms of technology, some of you will have heard, we're investigating, well, both under the existing road, so we don't need to take down any trees or make any clearances, under the existing easements and roads, cables, which would connect to every property that wanted to connect, it's optional. And then we'd look at how do we inject green energy into that and reliable energy into that. And the way that we would do that, so there's buckets of solar potential here. There's 120 megawatts if you look at of cleared potential, including rooftops and cleared land. And you probably need 6 megawatts, you know. So maybe 10 at the totally oversized. So there's plenty of potential, and we just looked at how would we store that. We spoke to, through that process, about 60 different technology providers, and hydrogen was the most promising technology. The study itself was undertaken whilst I was at Sunverge, which is a battery company. You want long-term storage, which is why hydrogen was, you know, so the process of converting electrical energy from solar into a stored form of hydrogen, bringing it back into electrical energy so you can use it in a microgrid, in a shared community grid. So many questions from that, though. Technical design questions, regulatory questions, governance questions. Who owns and operates this? Does the community own it? Do they operate it? How do they hold people to account? All of those questions need a lot of analysis to do it, to actually get it to be ready for an investor, be it the community or someone else, government body, anybody. It needs to be thoroughly investigated. There need to be designs and plans, costed. And that's basically where we're at now, as we're starting that process. We've received the funding to do that analysis, and that's what we're kicking off.
The solar will convert the water into hydrogen gas. It will be stored in storage cylinders, which will then, the hydrogen gas will then run the generators, which as they're running will also maintain the capacity in the batteries, so that if there is a downfall at some point, then the batteries can then automatically cut in to be able to run. And all this engineering is done. They've done it with solar and batteries at Lakeland Downs. It is an amazing phenomenon. It's the first solar baseload power solar farm in the country. And you know, the other thing, you know, when you talk about availability of land, there is already landholders that have said, we got it, and there are ideal sites that have said, we are here, we're ready to talk to you. If you're looking for a solar array, we're quite happy to make land available for it. So that you know, they're already coming to us and saying, we've got land available, would you please use us?
So if the idea is about bringing down CO2, which is a very, to me and to my company, is a renewable energy consultancy company, it's a very, you know, good thing to chase into the future, you'll need more generation, simple as that. You'll lose diversity. What's probably critical there too is your generation centres, so where you'll be generating solar and where you'll be shipping it to and using it might not be the same places, hence why you have a grid. If they're not the same places, you'll also lose the ability to reach a high percentage renewable. And that might not matter to some people, but in terms of economics today, it's a very good thing to do, and we think it can be proven and demonstrated, and we think it'd be a really good thing for the community. Telecommunications is a big problem up here, right? In terms of reliability of coverage, and it's quite frustrating for a lot of people. So there'd be nothing to stop you, given that the conduit's going to be put under the roads from and under the easements from putting in fibre. We think that a stable communications network is a really valid part of the analysis and something that would help the community and both the power supply and the community in general with its lifestyle.
Oh, look, I don't know where we'd stand legally on that. We need to firstly have the conversations with council, but before we can do that, we really need to do the design work as well, which is why we've got the engineers on board. And, you know, it's a valid question. For what reason would they deny what people want? If it's not visible, if it doesn't impact people, if it's optional, why would you deny your neighbour what they wanted if it didn't impact you? I think it's probably...
And I'm sure the council would support us.
Well, I'm next to Julia. Can I ask you, Julia? What do you think of that question?
Okay, there's a few things that have been said. I'm just really trying to focus, and I'm thinking about it in terms of whenever there is a proposal that someone, a proponent, wants to put to council, I think the best thing would be when you're ready, when you've got the designs, you need to sit down with our staff, our engineers and councillors, and then we can actually look at how that would work. Because at this moment, we don't know. I think I'm really interested when you get to the situation where you need to talk to council, just make a meeting. That's what we're here for. And then we can actually look at that. I'm not saying that we're going to put up a roadblock. We don't know at the moment. The other thing I suppose we don't know, if it's a private investor, for example, I suppose the things that we'll be concerned about, will there be an expectation that there would be significant funds from council to make this happen? Because that's something that we probably wouldn't like, because that's then all ratepayers, including ratepayers, he would have to pay for. So if it's going to work, if it's going to be viable and you have a private investor, well, then it should go, because otherwise it's not going to fly ultimately.
I don't think that we would be coming to council and asking for a donation of money for the project. Like an in-kind donation to have access to the road verge would be all we would ask, as far as I'm aware. Yeah. Yeah.
Can I say also, there's already been significant interest from private sector to have their names attached to this. Now, at the end of what you're talking about here, by the time this project is finished, you will, for the first time, have something that is fully costed, fully engineered, a full structure of what is required, and an amount of money that it's going to cost. Now, there's no question, because of the World Heritage site, there needs to be a contribution from the state, there needs to be a contribution from the federal government. It is a pity that $1 million that has just been put out by the state has been peed up against the wall, because it's not worth a cup full of cold water. All they're wanting to do is another survey. But having said that, they're going to have no choice. There's no excuse, because it will be, it's not about it might cost this or that, it will be fully costed. It will also determine how it's going to be done. And there are a number of very, very significant national companies that want to have this on the wall as saying we've been part of this solution. So they're prepared to put money in this. Also, there's been indications that they will also be, you know, there's others that want to run the grid. The fact is that they're there, and we're not going to be out there running it ahead of time so that those that have another issue are going to start to run static. Let's get the darn thing done. We hope that it'll be done by the middle of next year. That way you've got effectively a bankable document. Now, as far as you guys are concerned, you know, this, and I don't think this has changed from council. No, from council. Back in April 2007, you know, regardless of the, first of all, there was a support for council, from council. I know, Julia, it's not yours, but nevertheless, it's a council thing, that mains grid power be provided to the consolidated area, and this is north of the river, in an environmentally sensitive manner. They then go on to say, regardless of the type of electricity supply, one of the aims of the provision of power north of the Daintree River should be to provide an equitable electricity supply with on par with the rest of Queensland. And that's exactly what we're trying to do. So you have a choice one way or the other. you know, it's not going to exclude you from any opportunities that you might have, but it also provides an opportunity for the business community, the health clinic, the schools, and all of the residents that choose to do this. They can make that decision and have access. And that's the council resolution in letter in 2007.
So they were pushed for time. They had $1 million to spend on a company. I used to actually started my career at KPMG. It's a great accounting firm. One of the big accounting firms. I don't know how you come up with those questions if you haven't got engineering designs. So how do you know how much it's going to cost? So I'll start with that. So if I look at that report, what did they do? They said there's 140 kilometres of line. It's actually 120 if you look at all the spatial maps and you service every property. And it's safe to say, you know, I don't think everyone's going to take it up. It's not for everyone. Some people vehemently oppose it, and that's fine. Warren's got some words for that later on. You know, it's optional. We're not forcing this upon anyone. That just won't fly, my view. So what were some of the other things? They didn't assume that people in the Daintree use hot water in their energy. I don't know. I love my hot showers, but I live in, you know, Brisbane, reticulated Brisbane, where I get power at 27 cents and it's always reliable. It's fantastic. But one of the assumptions, which is, you know, normally 30 to 40% of people's load is thermal energy, is that you guys don't have any hot water. It says it on page 13 of the report. So really big mistake, like materially big mistake in the report. What are some of the other ones? They talked about trucking hydrogen. Well, it was never planned. The plan was to make it here with solar on your own cleared land. You know, people might have excess solar from their rooftop that they're not using at a particular point in time. It goes into the grid, gets turned into stored form of energy, gets brought back on when you need it. That's the concept. The plan that we talked about, and this was what we got from the feedback first, was that you would have similar tariff regime to what everyone else, for equity purposes, to what everyone else in Australia has. So you get, you know, and everyone's price is a little bit different in, you know, mainland NEM connected Australia, but let's say it's 27 cents. You'd buy your power for about that, whatever the benchmark cost is. And feed-in tariffs would be the same. You'd be able to inject your power in to the market if you've got excess solar, because somebody, because you're connected, so the businesses are running in Cape Trib, they're using power in the daytime. You might not be home, you live further down in Diwan or somewhere else, at Cow Bay. If you're in a connected grid and you have excess power, that's how grids and feed-in tariffs work. You're pumping power up to someone who's using it. That's a transaction. They've taken your energy. It might not be a financial transaction, but we're suggesting that you'd get paid for that if you decided to connect to the grid. And that would be analysed and modelled, because the cheapest form of energy, if you look at the Australian energy market today, is solar that someone produces on their roof and consumes themselves. That's the cheapest. The next cheapest is probably a cross between what someone has at a solar farm that's consumed in the market, or what they consume that's from solar that they generated and put through their hot water system. And thereafter, it gets more expensive. There you have the other generators that come in. You have other forms. So, you know, if it's coal from the market or whatever it is. So really what we would really like to see is people consume as much of their own as they can, but to supply the grid, because a lot of people can't produce their own power because they have too much coverage, not enough, you know, because it's World Heritage Rainforest, you're going to need a solar farm somewhere to pop up if you want green energy in the Daintree, if you want to be 100%. And fortunately, you've got plenty of cleared land for that. You might have cattle on it at the moment, or it might have something else, but there is adequate to cover your needs from an engineering point of view.
First of all, the state government study has nothing to do with us. They made that decision, I think, their budget before last. They've gone ahead and done that. Certainly, I agreed, and we had the meetings. The reason why we haven't committed to anything, or the majority of councils haven't at this stage, because we don't know what we're committing to. One of the reasons why I came here tonight was to learn more about it. You're now, Russell, at a stage where you've got this funding, and when you get to the stage of the actual design, how it's going to impact on council infrastructure, come and see us.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that.
We've said consistently we're not stopping anything.
No.
And actually, with Warren being in government, now you've been able to achieve what you said you would a couple of weeks before the election. You're also able to achieve from your end of government if there needs to be additional money. I mean, the $1 million or just under $1 million is not going to pay for the establishment of this microgrid. There needs to be either private investment or significant external funding. The only way you're going to have government funding is a combination of state and federal. The alternative then is a private investor who will have to be convinced that it's going to be viable. So all the work that you're doing now is what they will need to understand. We call it a feasibility study, but it's really a business case. It's a business case on how this can be achieved. And come and see us when you're ready.
They're going to meet the time frames, no problem at all. And at the end of the day, not only will you have a document there, feasibility, you'll have a document there that the contractors can pick up and start physically starting the work. And all of the questions that the state government should have got out of the $1 million that they squandered will be answered in this report, because Richard's still got a hell of a lot of this. But this is the last stage. Let me make this very, very clear. This is the last stage before they pull out the shovels. Now, okay, there is an obligation by feds, there is an obligation by state, not by council, but there is an obligation by feds, there is an obligation by the state in relation to allocating funding to this. There is no question about that. Council's role in here, because the previous mayor had decided to take back all of the roads, so they're actually owned by council, not by the state government. The role for council is to facilitate access, to allow it to happen. That's really all the council has. There's already, as I said, people standing up and saying, well, we're interested in operating this grid, putting some money into this grid, but we can't answer those questions until these guys know exactly what is required, whether we need one generator down south, the south of the area, and one up at Cape Tribulation, or whether it can be operated on one grid, whether we need one array or whether you need two arrays to be able to meet the requirements. They know all the technical stuff that they need. The cleared land, there is infinitely enough of it available, so you get 100% sunshine. You don't have to push down a single shrub, let alone push down a tree. Mm.